It's an amazing song, and I think one of the most probing indictments of war-based violence ever committed to a rock and roll song. Now, before that, we heard Looking for a Kiss, and that was a 1972 demo that was taken from a compilation record called Lipstick Killers.
Yes, now what this is actually a collection of demos that the band did in 72 at the Mercer Street Studios with original drummer Billy Mercia. And a lot of the versions of the songs are much slower and sludgier, kind of in their earlier state, probably because they were still at most points here learning the material. And it's, I think, the only studio document with Billy Mercia that I know of. There's several tracks, though. But it's interesting to hear it in that way.
Yeah, you mentioned it has that sludgy sound, and it really is more reminiscent to me of something from early Stooges or even the Velvet Underground with that very, like, basic drum beat. And it's actually missing a pretty infamous portion of the song. On the album proper, it opens up with a quote from the one song by the Shangri-Las, mm-hmm. Give Him a Great Big Kiss, where Johansson quips, "When I say I'm in love, you best believe I'm in love, L-U-V." But that's not here, so that was before that appropriation took place. Still a powerful song, but yeah, a very different rendition of that. And then we started things off with one of the best rock and roll songs of all time, one of my favorites, and one of my favorite album openers, Personality Crisis.
Yeah, this is a great song. It's been featured on so many compilations. It's been featured in so many things. And there's a reason. It's a great song, and what a great way to start the album with, musically and lyrically.
So we're going to be getting to side B in just a little bit, but before we do, we want to give a little bit more context about the record, and specifically about its production, because on the behest of Mercury Records, they hired Todd Rundgren as a producer. And for those who may not be too familiar with Rundgren's work, he kind of reached unexpected superstardom with some hits and with this album Something Anything, but he was known as a musical prodigy. He was definitely leaning towards the more progressive pop element of things. So when he was brought on to produce this album by the Dolls, his initial impression of the group was tepid at best.
He did not like them originally. I think that did change with time, but during the studio, there was definitely, when they were recording, there was conflict. You were mentioning during the break, we're talking about a little bit about the sessions, but the New York Dolls would tend to bring an entourage with them, which kind of pissed off Todd Rundgren.
Oh, yes.
Because it was harder to focus on the recording. Additionally, the drummer Jerry Nolan was the most trained and professional of the group at the time, although when they were recording the album, he had a hard time kind of keeping time, unfortunately. So he had to,
he actually stepped into the recording booth along with Nolan and showed him how to keep the beat by tapping a cowbell in order to keep that beat. So that's how Nolan basically played along, using that cowbell as a click track. That wasn't the only time he intervened as well. Apparently, during one of the songs, I forget which, he actually just stopped the session altogether and walked into Arthur Kane's booth and plugged in his cabinet for his bass because he didn't plug in his bass.
So, you know, they were having a good time, we should say, in the studio. Anyways, that's some of the stories from this time.
There's plenty. I mean, in spite of all this, there are a lot of stories, but the album itself was only recorded in 8 days and it was mixed in half a day, so it was a very quick turnover rate for that.
And initially, several band members said that they disliked the album, and this would be a trend, unfortunately, that would follow with their two albums during the initial run. They were just not happy. All of them were not happy with the overall sounds of the record, although that's changed with time, even by some of the members.
That's right. So Johansson himself praised Rundgren for the production, and he said they really came across like they were in the room with the audience on this record, like they were performing live. And Sylvain actually early on was a proponent of the album, again saying this captures what the sound of the band was live. You know what? I will take that. I really do. I'm one of the people who actually really appreciate Rundgren's touch on this. I think he just polishes the edges just enough so you get to hear the nuance and you get to hear every component of what the band was producing here without interfering too much. In fact, his only real interference, in spite of his studio trickery on his own albums, was some piano on Personality Crisis, and he added some very subtle synths on Frankenstein and Vietnamese Baby. And other than that, he pretty much was hands-free on the entire album.
Yeah, so we're actually going to get started with side two of the album. We're going to start off with versions of two songs that... we're going to hear two versions of songs, but done by the members in a solo rendition.
That's right. And sorry to cut you off, Dave, but I just wanted to say one more thing, though, just before we go, about Todd Rundgren. He's very polarizing in a lot of ways, and for the production on this album, I would say there's two types of New York Dolls fans. Those who prefer the sound of this one, and those who prefer the sound of Too Much Too Soon. There's subsequent follow-up, but I just wanted to put that out there. I don't think either is wrong. Both capture just different facets of what the band
sounded
like. I would
say there's three. There's some that don't like the sound of any of them.
Well, I don't consider their opinions.
Maybe they're not fans.
I don't respect their opinions. But anyway, with that said, anyway, Dave was mentioning we're going to hear something by one of the members from a solo record committed by Sylvain Sylvain in 1998, where he recorded his own version of the side B opener, Trash, from the album Sleep, Baby Doll. So that's how we're going to start this off. Again, celebrating 50 years of the album New York Dolls.
Thank you.
That has been 50 years of New York Dolls here on Revolution Rock, celebrating this magnificent anniversary by playing the entirety of that debut album from the New York group that helmed and really streamlined what eventually would be known as punk rock. Yeah, it's been an incredible 50 years just to hear the influence of this record, and it's incredible going back and hearing the entire album, but of course, as always, as we do this on this show, with a twist.
Yes, and we ended off with an alternate version of the song Jet Boy from a compilation called 7 Day Weekend. And we were talking about this. I believe this is an alternate take from the sessions. I'm not 100%, but it does sound like it.
Yeah, certainly. Very close to what they would have on the album proper, but you can still tell there were some nuances they didn't quite achieve yet, but a great rendition nonetheless. Before that, we heard something from the album proper with Private World, one of my favorite songs on the album itself. And this one's interesting because it basically is the sort of escapist plea to find a world that's more stable and something that is more peaceful to live in. And it's one of the few songs co-written by Arthur Kane, the bass player for the group.
Yeah, and before that, we heard a live rendition of a song called Pills, originally by Bo Diddley, reworked in their own style. This comes from a live release called French Kiss 74. I'm not sure where.
France.
Okay, I was going to say maybe France, but.
Definitely France.
I didn't want to assume. But, anyways, Pills, the way that the Dolls do it is great. They rework Bo Diddley's track, Make It Their Own. Also, it's kind of fitting given the time period and the fact that a lot of the band members did have problems with excess. Not that that's a funny thing.
No, but it definitely was played tongue-in-cheek, I'll say that.
Yeah.
A great rendition. One of my favorite covers, bar none, by any group. Prior to that, we heard Johnny Thunders doing a rendition of Subway Train, and that's taken from his wonderful 1978 solo record, So Alone, which was recently reissued earlier this year.
Yeah, through Rhino.